end of my presentation, I was tired from the day. I spoke most of the day, and I wanted to go down the hot tub. And so I go down the hot tub, Cole, and like any reasonable person, happy to get in the hot tub, and a guy and his wife are in there. And this story doesn't go where you think it's going. In the studio, to prove to people that I don't always wear the same outfit. We don't film all these in a single day. So when you comment, and they said, I believe he only has one shirt, and I all do. So I decided to buy a second shirt, and it was white. A few people in this office, namely Sabrina, love Starbucks. And my fundamental belief is 20 years from now, Cole, I think people are going to want to meet at Starbucks and drink coffee. I know it's a bold idea. Welcome back to Be Wealthy with Brett Tanner. It is episode 0011, Cole. And there actually can't be two number ones because that would be 11. And that's where we're at today. It's a little Ricky Bobby, a little Talladega Nights if you're not first, you're last, Cole. Cole, 24 years old. Have you seen Talladega Nights?
That one I have seen. I've seen a lot of the comedy stuff. I haven't seen the Lampoons.
Favorite line from Talladega Nights?
I think it's when there's a cougar in his backseat. I don't have a specific line. I just like the scene.
I'm going to come at you like a spider monkey. I mean, come on, Cole. You've watched the movie more recent than I have, and you can't do.
Well, I like when they're prepping for the dinner, and I've been working for hours for this, and then it's just Powerade and delivered pizza.
Well,
that was pretty good.
This will probably get me in trouble on social media.
And that's why I didn't want to say something like that.
He's like, you know what? I wake up in the morning, I basically piss excellence. I mean, it's just Ricky Bobby's the greatest character ever.
There's just not a lot of great lines for.
Comedy movies
have changed a little bit.
Well, it's definitely, you could say that today. And I said, as Ricky Bobby said it, Brett Tanner didn't say it, Ricky Bobby said it. I didn't say it. So you can get closer to things, Cole. Now, by the way, I am actually here in the studio to prove to people that I don't always wear the same outfit. We don't film all these in a single day. I am wearing only due to the comments. So when you comment and they said, I believe he only has one shirt, and I all do. So I decided to buy a second shirt and it was white. I'm probably never going to wear it again, Cole, but I wanted to prove that we listen to your comments. So put comments in the chat. I'm back. We had our episode last time. It was Dave Ramsey part two. Part one, which was episode 09. Many of the detractors and haters said there wouldn't be an episode 10 and I'd be canceled. That did not happen. And why did that not happen, Cole? Because you can't cancel yourself. And when we have our own podcast studio, Cole, and it's just you and me, unless you quit being over there and pushing record, we aren't going to be canceled. And so I did another episode on Dave Ramsey, which is episode 10. Again, they said there wouldn't be 10. And I wanted to clarify it. And so I took the time to go to Dave Ramsey's actual website. Now, we've checked. We were wondering if it was hacked because many of the things on there, some of the followers get very confused about exactly the words he uses. And so I explained the difference between my views and his using his website because, Cole, people said I had it wrong.
It might be because it was on the website and it wasn't on Dave Ramsey's Audible.
Gosh, it's a good, I mean, some things, it's very challenging. That's a very, very good point, Cole. And so we talked about Tony Robbins' three things I learned at our convention. And we talked about why being a boat captain and owning a boat business might be the greatest unlock in your happiness. And that was all in our last episode. So do not forget, as you're watching your day, to subscribe. And we're going to jump in today and talk about something that I think people overlook. In all of their investments, Cole, I have this idea. And the idea is that there's a hidden cost. And all of your investments, Cole. Every single investment you're going to make, there's a hidden cost. And people talked about opportunity costs, but I like to call it something different because it encompasses more. And I call it soft costs. Life has soft costs. What does that mean, Cole? Well, it means that if you look at a particular investment, and we'll use Airbnb because I think it's one of those ones that the trendsetters love, Cole. And so if I take a home that was a long-term rental, and I was renting it for $2,000 a month, and I had a property manager, and this was an investment. It was passive, relatively speaking. I had someone, a property manager, managing it, and I'm getting a rate of return on my money that I enjoy. Okay, Cole? The soft costs in this are, how much time does it take me to oversee my manager? Because hard costs are things that go in a spreadsheet. We can see them. They're line items. They're actual raw expenses that we can see and we can measure them. Hard costs are very visible. We all understand what those are. Taxes, insurance, property manager, HOA, repairs. Those are facts. Cole, we can see them. What are the soft costs? Okay, well, time. So if I turn that same property, in the long-term basis, what is my time spent? Well, I'm overseeing the property manager. I'm dealing with financials. I'm doing a tax return. I've got a business license of some sort to rent a property. And so those are all of the time around that, it might be another soft cost call that's hard to grab is, what about if I have an assistant kind of helping me out with this? How much time is she spending on the rentals? It's really hard to say the exact amount of time unless you're monitoring your emails and saying, oh, 7.5 minutes to solve the rental problem there. So some of we have these other costs that are kind of hard. They're hard costs, meaning they're real dollars, but it's really hard to measure increments of time when you're sitting in the shower thinking about it because the tenant drove his car through the front door, right? Like, so that is a soft cost, right? There's soft costs in time, in emotion. And then you're kind of wrapping in things that it's just hard to break apart, right? You've got other, if you and your wife are working on it together, right? Like, how much time are we spending on this? Life has soft costs. So the hidden cost in life is soft costs. How can we get better at understanding the soft costs? And I'm going to give you a great example in my own life of how I took an investment that had a tremendous amount of soft costs in it. I'm going to tell you why I did the investment and why I ultimately sold it to eliminate the soft costs and to make it easier to manage and create more enjoyment in my life. And so I want to jump into today's episode, which is all about the soft costs. And so I got to start with a story, Cole, that I have told before. But before we jump in, I wanted to read some of our reviews off of Apple Podcasts. Wherever you watch, please leave us a review. If you're on Apple, do me a favor and stop right now. If you've got value to this, please leave a review. We read them. Tell us what we're doing great. Tell us what you'd like to hear. We want to know. Please write a review, and I want to read you a couple. Comes from Andrew Dunn 3. Brett will challenge the way you view the financial world and your personal investing philosophy. My partner and I joined the Be Wealthy Mastermind group close to 2 years ago, and it changed everything for us. When we joined the group, we both had day jobs looking to grow our side hustle. With Brett's help, we were able to scale to a team of 15 and over $1 million in revenue over a year. We credit all of this to what we learned in the group. And in addition to the business, we've learned investing philosophies and that are starting to allow us to remove the time variable from our returns. Would highly recommend his podcast, Mastermind, and Brett's coaching to anyone. Brother Andrew, thank you for that. Very, very kind. I love getting to see people do that, right? These guys had jobs. I got to be a part, a small part in that journey of watching them go to that, to the business guys, and they're crushing it today. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Appreciate you guys. And I want to grab one more from Podcast 2019, which is, Brett is a master at what he does. He delivers his podcast in a simplified and relatable way. If you want to learn from the best and have the opportunity to change your life and wealth trajectory forever, listen often and listen closely. And that is Podcast 2019. Very, very kind. Thank you, guys. I love what I do. And the only reason, Cole, that I'm on this side of a podcast talking about wealth is because I have failed more than everyone watching this in the wealth area. I really have. Like, I have done more things wrong. Trust me, if we were doing a podcast, Cole, of all the stupid things that I did with money and the things that didn't work, it's much longer. We would get those episodes at the links. You'd love to have them, Cole. Be 5-hour episodes all of the time, because every time I failed, it taught me something and I was able to learn and use all of those experiences to share with you what I actually believe and is relatable today. And I do that in a way that I hope is transparent. I'm not poking fun at anyone, but I do try to tell jokes, Cole, because I think that I'm a semi-pro comedian. And by that means I have no rankings at all. There's no basis to say that, but I'm thinking about becoming a professional comedian. Side note, before we jump in, Cole, are you I don't even know how to say the guy's last name. You a Nate Bergazzi?
Oh boy. Your favorite guy.
I don't even know. Is that you say his last name?
Probably. Just like what do you think from last episode.
What do you think it is?
You guys are like, Bergazzi.
Okay, but forget about it. So Nate Bergazzi, I guess his special, we got to link this in the show notes because this is the kind of value we're bringing.
They should be sponsoring us at this point.
Well, he's got to go on there. We got to go link him to that episode he did on Amazon. It's unbelievable. Guy's great. So Cole, we're jumping in today. We're talking about soft costs and I want to get right to it. So I was speaking at a buddy of mine's event, and today I only speak usually at my own events just because of time. And I have a really, really close friend in the real estate investing space. And at the end of my presentation, I was tired from the day. I spoke most of the day and I wanted to go down the hot tub. And so I go down the hot tub, Cole, and like any reasonable person, happy to get in the hot tub, and a guy and his wife are in there. And this story doesn't go where you think it's going. Doesn't turn into getting canceled. Nothing weird happened. I got in, I was just trying to sit there. And the guys that came in, weren't you one of the speakers today? I said, I was, man. I hope you got some value and hope that was helpful. And he's like, hey, I'm kind of got a lot going on. I'm moving back to San Diego from Greenville, South Carolina. And he told me a story where he moved his family from San Diego to Greenville, South Carolina, because the BMW plant was going in there. And he knew that BMW was going to have a certain amount of jobs, 3,000 jobs or whatever it was. And so he said, as the plants started getting closer going in, they put in these plants and they're billions and billions of dollars. And they take years to do. But as soon as the pads go in and they're committed to doing it, there's cranes out there and they're building it, you know they're about 12 to 18 months from being completed. And he said, what I do from there is I go figure out exactly what that job's paying. So how much is that BMW, the average employee, going to make at that job? And based on that, I know the amount of home they can afford based on the amount of money they're making at their job. He said, I then drive as close as I can get to the factory and I locate the right neighborhoods. Like, where would people actually want to live? Cole, so I have a job here and I'm making $75,000 a year and I'm in Greenville, South Carolina, back when they did this. And where would people live? And so he drives around, finds the places, and he started buying up all the homes. And he went and waited. He said, and over a period of years, I knew they would double because there's going to be, as these jobs go in, there's now all these people want to buy homes, right? So homes don't get built overnight. It's a lagging indicator. Homes get built later. And so there's going to be so much demand, people buying homes, there won't be enough supply and prices will rise. And I can double my money. And so he bought, I don't know, a couple hundred homes, did it, sold them, and made a fortune. So I'm like, whoa. Like, so let me get this straight. I have 1,000 questions. Let's get a round of drinks and let's run through them. And so I am now drilling this guy, asking questions like, hey man, what about this? What are the markets? What are the jobs? How do you track it? How do you find the information? And I asked the question of Cole, what are the 5 markets I should look at next year? One of them happened to be Huntsville, Alabama. And so I looked at Mazda, Toyota. You can look this up online and we could probably find a link in the notes that said Mazda, Toyota, their initial announcement, they were going in there. It's about 2018. I think they made the announcement. It was 2019. And so I flew out there, the pads were going in, 4,000 jobs were quoted. Now, what I didn't understand back then is when they quote 4,000 jobs, what happens is many of the parts manufacturers, their competitors, there's way more jobs that go in there than whatever they actually quote. Toyota's putting in 4,000, but it might be 5 to 10 times that amount by the time you get everyone, by the time you get everyone else that's going to have a job go in there. And so my goal was if I bought these houses, hopefully over the next 5 years, they would double in value. That was my investment thesis, that there would be all this demand for housing. There wouldn't be enough housing. And they would go up in value. And so a lot of the homes, I think I bought my first home out there, Cole. And this is why, if you go back to the Dave Ramsey episode where he says, never invest out of your own market, stay local forever. Cool. I'm in Arizona, I invest in Alabama. Are there some things you need to learn? Yes. But I was buying $35,000 homes that rented for $850 a month. So Cole, as a 24-year-old dude who spends a lot of time in rooms that I'm teaching in our programs and all around our clients, Cole, if you could buy homes for $33,000 that rent for $850, would you be interested in any of these types of homes?
I might even have a couple already if that were the case.
Yeah, you would be. I mean, like, you'd go, dude, this makes a lot of sense. I go out there. Now, by the way, the homes in Alabama, and when I showed up there, people thought I was a crazy person. And in fairness, Cole, I am a little crazy. But so they're like, Brett, this home, you know, in 2005, 6, 7, 8 in Arizona, when values went like this, you know what we did in Alabama? We went like this. You know, 2007, 8, 9, 10, when it went like this in Arizona? I was like, oh yeah, I remember. He's like, we kind of did this. And so he's like, that home that's you're going to buy for $35,000 or $50,000 in 20 years will be worth $35,000 or $50,000. And I said, well, that's actually not true. When those jobs go in, things are going to change. Like, it's going to be totally different. And so I was buying homes, my first homes, which is the last probably home I've ever bought off the MLS. Everything else we do is direct to seller. We have a very specific mail piece that we send out. We're happy to link the company we use. We'll put in the show notes. But we send a very specific mail piece or an actual check to buy someone's home that says, hey, you want to make this check real? Give us a call. I went specifically into those neighborhoods and bought houses. So I'm buying homes for $35,000 to $50,000. I ultimately acquired 41 of these homes, Cole, commercial building. And that was in from 2019 to probably 2022. And as of yesterday, I sold 21 of those homes. They didn't double in value, Cole. That's the frustrating part. So I bought all these homes. They did not double in value. They about 3 to 4x'd some of their values, and I made a tremendous cash flow. Prices skyrocketed, and it's the best investment I've ever made in my entire life. So I sold 21 of them, and I sold them due to the soft and hidden costs. So I love rentals, but these had already did what they needed to do. They went from, you know, $50,000 to $150,000 or $50,000 to $130,000, or they all way more than doubled. And it came a time where I looked at managing those and continue to do it, had soft costs, right? I get calls from the property manager. I've got roofs, I've got ACs, all the things I'm great with, but I did the investment to do specific things and it did it. So I wanted to find a better way. If like, if all things were equal and I could have a better investment, would I rather have, Cole, one home or one building or 21? And so I want to walk you through kind of what I thought about. And so as you watch this, if you go, you click the show notes, we've got a couple tools we're going to reference here that are on our website. And one of them is just this, what I call our rental tracker, or fair market value on all investments, but it's a rental tracker. And if you put all of this data in there and then you sort it, you're going to look at different types of returns and try to see, where's the opportunity in my portfolio? I believe you should be looking at all your investments, and every year you should have a goal for every investment. You should be asking the question, did it perform like I expected? Is there a better place to allocate this capital to, right? As investors, we're always looking, can I get a better return with either less soft costs? Can I get it easier, more efficiently, with less noise, right? That's always what we're asking. So net sum game, I spent $1,336,200 in these 21 properties. By the way, which of my portfolio do you think I sold first, Cole? If I've got 41 houses, and I'm going to sell 21, do you think I sold the best 21? I probably didn't. I sold the one that had the greatest repairs and were delivering the least returns to me, right? So I had a way to measure that, which is that rental tracker that I gave you. So I bought these for $1.3 million. It closed yesterday. The final sales price was $2.55 million. So increase in equity, just shy of double. Now, the reason I say did all the investments, Cole, again, this is the worst portion. The other side of it is way more than double. This section, right, just shy of double on the equity increase alone. Now, what else is included in that, though? That's the equity. So I also cash flowed, and I'm going to give you the real numbers here, over $450,000 after debt service is what I made in the nearly 4 years I had these. So my profit all in is about $1.6 million. Plus I saved a bunch of money in taxes. And so I'm sitting there, and the question I'm asking is, if I continue to manage these, how much soft costs will I have in my life, my staff and emotion and all that things, thinking about these investments? So I look at, where else can I go? Now, mind you, there's a couple calculations as you go look at your historical performance of investments. I'm looking at my cap rate off purchase. So what's the rate of return off the money that's actually invested? But you also want to look at all of your investments value today. Sam Zell wrote a really great book called Am I Being Too Subtle? We lost one of our investing legends. We lost two last year, Charlie Munger and Sam Zell. But Sam Zell, in his book, Am I Being Too Subtle, talks about any day you choose not to sell your investments, you're choosing to buy them at the same price, at today's value. Now, it doesn't mean you should always sell your investments. I believe you should buy real estate to hold it forever. I also believe that certain investments, as you grow them, you're going to want to roll those up into larger investments that become easier to manage and make more money in a more efficient way. So I started buying lots of single family investments. I'm still doing that. My goal is to roll those up into buildings, which I'll explain here in a minute. And so I looked at that and I said, hey, these investments did what they need to do. They're cash flowing. But if I had the choice and I could take 21 assets and move that into one and all the math was the same, would I do that? And so the answer I landed at was yes. And so I've also, in our investing world, in addition to look at the returns, every year I've got these rituals, right? And I've got rituals throughout my life. I've got things I do every day. I've got things I do every week and things I do every month, both on a personal, on a health, on a relationship, on an investment side, where I've got all these rituals in my life. And so at the end of every year, from an investment standpoint, one of the rituals I do is I look at all our investments and I say, do I need to look at restructuring any debt? So if I did shorter term loans, like a lot of the properties I bought in Alabama were on a 5-year fixed mortgage, and then they would adjust, the rate would adjust to market value. I was getting debt though at 3.5% interest is what I'm paying on the money I borrowed very conservatively from a bank in Alabama. So I started paying down some of that debt because I knew that debt was going to mature and I had a plan for that. Again, debt's not risky. This is where I differ from Dave. I could see the debt expiring and I chose to use cash flow that I had and I had a plan and I knew when it was going to mature. So as rates rose and I knew my 3.5% interest rate was going to adjust to say 7 or 8, I chose to pay that down out of the cash flow the investments created. I also look at what were my expenses last year, because in rental properties, right, your market rent is fairly capped. I cannot take a $2,000 home and rent it for $3,000 a month. Cole, that won't work. If I take a home that should rent for $2,000 a month and I price it at $3,000, Cole, what's going to happen? The potential tenants are going to look at other homes for $2,000 and rent those. So I can only, my income is capped. My expenses, though, are the opportunity that exists in rental properties, right? How can I lower the repairs and the expenses throughout the year? I look at, what if I were to sell that property and seller finance it, become the bank in the transaction? Instead of being the landlord, I become the bank, and it'll improve my returns. I also might look at, hey, can I take this investment and transition it? Can I disposition it to a better, an alternative investment or a different market that would have higher returns? So those are the things I looked at. And when I got all the way in there, I analyzed these 21 properties. I looked at all the rates of return. Here's the thing, based on today's value. So again, if I bought a property, Cole, for $50,000, the rents for $850, the cap rate might be 10% per year. However, when that home for $150,000, so if I'm netting, if I bought a property for $50,000, Cole, and I net $5,000 a year after all expenses and everything, that is a 10% cap rate. Now, Cole, as that property went from $50,000 to $150,000, the rent went from, say, $850 a month to $1,300 a month. Values tripled, but rents did not triple. So my return, my cap rate now on today's value, on average for these 21 properties, was 4.92%. I actually had properties in a given year that actually had a negative cap rate. How's that happen, Cole? I had a property that had an AC unit and a roof. And so that year I had to put in whatever, $25,000 in that property. Well, if the rent's only $18,000 gross, I'm going to lose money on that property for that year. The average cap rate on all 21 of these I sold off, today's value is 4.92% based on the money I got. And so I looked at my best, the properties I had were the best were the worst. I looked at everything and I decided to sell these 21 houses. What I want to do is sell those 21 houses, and I want to do what's a 1031 exchange. So you can, if I sell it on a 1031 exchange, what happens when I sell the property, that money will go to what's called a qualified exchange qualified exchange intermediary. So when it, from title, the title company, they'll actually send them the money. So I won't touch any of the money. It all goes to this third party. And at third party, there's a couple of rules. I have 45 days to identify the properties that I want to buy. There's some rules that you have to follow. There's one of three rules we could get to on another podcast. They're going to hold the money. I've got 45 days to identify the things I want to buy. I've got 6 months to close on them. So effective yesterday, started my 45-day period. Well, I'd already started looking for deals. Why? Because 45 days goes like that. And I also want to get through inspection periods and make sure everything, because outside the 45 days, I'm committed to closing and I can't add other properties to it. So then I started asking the question, what are the businesses that I believe in? Right? I want to, instead of go to houses, I want to go to commercial. And I want to go to ideally retail businesses that I believe are durable and are a thing. And so I thought of the one that, Cole, everyone does, and no one more than a few people in this office, namely Sabrina, loves Starbucks. And my fundamental belief is 20 years from now, Cole, I think people are going to want to meet at Starbucks and drink coffee. I know it's a bold idea. I don't do it personally. I have a coffee machine in my house. I think it's just wonderful. But people are going to, I believe that Starbucks is a real thing. I think it's going to survive. I think it's going to make it. So I am in the process of likely exchanging 21 rental houses for $2.5 or $2.6 million I sold for $2.6 million in a Starbucks. Cole, the numbers line up actually perfectly. And here's what's fascinating about the math. The math is actually going to be higher on the Starbucks than it was in the 21 rentals. And by the way, the difference in Starbucks, it's what's known as a triple net lease, which is net of repairs, expenses, tax, insurance, every expense that you have as a landlord, all those are paid. It's called triple net. And all those expenses are paid depending on your lease, but in this case, all are paid. So my net rental income is my net rental income. I don't have to manage the building. I don't have to do anything. All I have to do is look at the lease. Did they pay? It's guaranteed by Starbucks corporate. It's got a 10-year lease built into it. And they can have options to extend up to 20. So I am at the start of a 10-year lease, Cole. So for the next 10 years, I'm not going to have the soft costs. And so the point of this episode is isolating the soft costs in your investments. I also want you to think about the soft costs in your life. And so what are the costs? So let's compare Alabama portfolio to Starbucks lease, Cole. So first thing, how many assets are we managing? How many different things are we thinking about? We got 21 versus one. Cole, what do you think is easier to manage, 21 or one?
I'm gonna go with one.
Boom. Cole? Touch some sky. That's the right answer. Cool. Next thing. How many LLCs did I have? Well, for 21, because you want asset protection, the way I think about it is how much equity do I want to expose in each LLC that I have? How much equity do I want to expose? So I had, I believe, five different LLCs that owned those 21 assets. Cool. On the new building, I'm going to have one LLC that's only going to hold that building. So now, what's easier, Cole? Five or one? keep in mind, of those five, Cole, each of those has a P&L. Each of those has a separate set of bookkeeping. Each of those has a tax return. You've got insurance policies. You've got 21 different insurance policies as opposed to one. I mean, but all these things add up, and we all look at it like, oh, it's totally doable. No, Brett, it's all the same. It absolutely is not the same. So we'll get to the end. So now, accounting. To account for 21 rental properties, if when they go vacant throughout the year, right, you're going to have probably three utilities per rental properties times 21. So you got 63 rental utilities you're paying. So I would say it takes about 8 hours a month to do the accounting on 21 rentals. Now, how much accounting does it take, Cole, when you have one deposit? Like, hold on, wait a minute. Let me get my QuickBooks, and I'm done. So I think that's going to be 5 minutes or less. We'll call it 30. So you got 8 hours a month, 30 minutes. Cole, let's go to tax returns. When you had five different LLCs, you're finding five tax returns. Just more complicated. How many? And by the way, the amount of money to do those tax returns. Again, one asset, bam, one set of income expenses done. 21 different lines on your tax return if you've seen how it's done. And so what's it going to cost? It's not just five returns. I would argue that those five returns probably are cost $1,500 per versus the one return is probably going to be $2,000, maybe $1,500. How about renewals? I've got to manage 21 different renewal extensions that are all annual. On single family rentals, when do the renewals come up? Every single year. We've got to get the tenant to sign on. They can move out every year. As opposed to, what is going to happen there? I'd say I get a 10-year lease, Cole. We're not talking about renewals. By the way, the renewals are already predetermined, and they can go out another 10 years beyond the initial term. By the way, every 5 years, automatically 10% rental increase. Cole, automatically built in. I got to go to my tenants every year and try to get that increase. Now let's talk about vacancy. All of my single family rentals, what's the question you're asking, Cole? It is, I budget that it'll be vacant 1 month per year. Is that true? No. Hopefully, on my average single family rental property, my average tenant stays for 32 months. But I have to budget they're going to move out every year because that does happen. And if they do, it will be vacant for likely 30 days. As opposed to my vacancy, Cole, for the next 10 years, unless Starbucks goes out of business and they go bankrupt, I'm not going to have any vacancy. I might not have vacancy for 20 or 30 years. That's possible. As opposed to 1 month per year. All right, then we go down to rent collection. Again, is it easier to collect 21 properties or one? It's gonna be easier. I'm gonna tell you, it, by the way, ACH, Starbucks, corporate, boom, dropped your account.
Especially Alabama, sometimes it might rain, things get a little tricky.
I gotta tell you, so the eviction laws, as you deal with rental properties in different states, the eviction laws are radically different. And I will tell you a story that happened in Alabama. Arizona is very landlord friendly on rental property. They believe, did you pay your rent? No. If you didn't pay, get out. Alabama, they do a little differently. And I am from the country, so I can do this accent. But the judge's like, hey, we ain't gonna evict nobody because it's gonna rain coming up Tuesday, and we ain't gonna evict nobody in the rain. I'm like, hey man, I get it. This guy hasn't paid in 60 days. And I get it's raining, but we'll bring him an umbrella. I'm not anti-tenant. I'm just pro getting paid. I had investments and they're living in the house and I'm willing to fix anything. We'll do any of the repairs. We need our tenants to pay rent. It's a real thing. And if they don't want to pay rent, they just can't be there. And it is the courts and municipalities' rules and laws that should move the tenants out that aren't paying. Right? That's a very logical thing. We have to have this occur because we need landlords. We need people that want to provide housing. It is a necessary need, and we need investors to want to do it. And many jurisdictions are against it. And so because it could rain, Cole, and that can really knock things, you know, down for a minute, managing all of that. So what are the soft costs? And I gave it to you there. What do you think it costs? Here's another way to think about it, Cole. If we have 1,000 rental properties, with property management, how much staff and labor and time and energy does that take to manage? As opposed to, we had one building that was the same price as 1,000 rental properties. That'd be a huge building. I get it. What's going to be easier to manage? Now, the question is, do you have the right building? Now, the risk all become, would you rather have, you're diversified in this group of 1,000? I would argue that I'm much more secure with Starbucks than I am with the 21 tenants that were in my properties in Alabama. I think that's a better credit bet.
Might as well be a treasury bill. I mean, the U.S. government and Starbucks, I put them toe-to-toe.
I got to tell you.
No safer investment.
I will tell you what. Unless something changes where they determine that coffee is bad for you. Unless they come out on a rampage. But even that old, even the gluten thing didn't wipe out Krispy Kreme, Cole. Okay? Cole, I know you can't go probably pounding like 25 donuts, okay? On a gluten basis for you. But I'm telling you, if you could, it'd really be something. But even that fiasco didn't knock out Krispy Kreme. I'm sure they had a tough time. But Starbucks isn't going away. It's never going to happen. And so I just want you to go back and think about soft costs. Now, think about soft costs as they relate to your life. What are the soft costs? When someone invites you to go to do something you don't want to do and you do it because you feel like, well, they invited me, I have to go. I've got to go to this party, Cole, on Saturday night because I have to go. I view that soft cost as very significant because A, I don't want to be there. Why do I need to go to a party that I don't want to be at? As a 43 adult male, Cole, I've decided that I only want to do things that bring tremendous joy. I want to spend more time with the people that I care about and figure that out. So I think as you make decisions, evaluate the soft costs around anything you're going to buy in every decision you make, because life does have soft costs. They're not only investments, they're here. And the point of this episode was to anchor in a point that there's a better way to make more money more efficiently. There's a better way to have the experiences that you have more efficiently. There's a better way to have epic vacations more efficiently, more effectively, right? Every area of your life can be improved and every area can be measured and managed to create the most happiness you can enjoy in every single moment. So I want to tie all that out. As we're wrapping up here today, Cole, we covered the soft costs. One of the concepts that I think has fundamentally changed the way I think about time, the way about investing money, and that no two things are ever equal. And anything you say yes to, you are saying no to something else. And be aware, as you go out there, you absolutely have to be aware of the soft costs. Before we wrap up today, I do want to talk about today's sponsor who was a part of that deal. I did a cost segregation on every single rental property in that portfolio. What is cost segregation? Is a way to take the normal depreciation, and instead of taking it over 27 and a half years on a house, you take it a lot sooner, which if you are a professional real estate investor, will save you money on taxes. Get a free proposal from our sponsor today, which is singlefamilycostseg.com. Go to singlefamilycostseg.com. There will be a link in the show notes, and they will give you a free proposal. You do want to make sure and you check that with your CPA. Prior to it, it is free. Check with your CPA and make sure that you could use the extra depreciation, and then it would save you money. With that, we are here to close out episode 0011. What are life soft costs? How can you be aware of them? I hope to see you in our next episode, 0012. It's going to be wild. See you there.